Shark Dropper is brought to you by Audible.com. Go to www.audibletrial.com/shark to get your free audiobook download and 30-day free trial. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPod, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Should I stop chewing gum right now?
Yeah, it's kind of fucking annoying. How unprofessional.
Whatever.
It's a guest spot. We have a guest spot occupied. Hi, welcome to Shark Dropper. I am Kyle.
I'm Robert.
I'm John.
And joining us today, filmmaker, movie extraordinaire, right? Is that an accurate description?
whatever you want to call me, man.
Mr. Thomas Nooney, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I was drinking one night. I was on Facebook.
Well, that's not very specific.
I saw his Kickstarter trailer because he had a little Kickstarter campaign for his movie, and I watched the trailer and I was like, "Fucking hey, this is awesome!" So I think it was that weekend or that Monday with these guys. I'm like, "Hey, you guys should check this out. We'll try to get this guy on the podcast." Mm. This is after I had like messaged you that Friday night, and ever since then I'd wanted to get you on. Robert had been out of town a couple weeks here and there, and so we finally got you on. So it's nice. So. Yeah, tell us about the movie, man.
Oh, right on. Okay,
Get right up on this.
You can pull
this big black thing.
Yeah, this big.
If I had a nickel for every time somebody told me that,
you'd be rich.
I just have a nickel.
Okay,
would you?
Yeah,
I'd like to have a couple nickels.
I'd have 20 cents.
So yeah, tell us about the movie.
Okay, so the movie is a feature length film. It's called Monty Comes Back. I worked with a production company called Orensis Films out in Bradenton and Sarasota, Florida, to produce the film. My cinematographer and producer, Trishel Tejasvee, owns that company. One of my other producer was Vincent Dale, who had a few films hit the Sarasota area pretty hard. No Real Than You Are and Paris Love Conspiracy. I've known Trishel for 2 years. I've known Vincent since FSU, which was like 7 years ago. So let's not talk about years anymore. anyway, so the movie was entirely shot in Anna Maria Island. It's about a huge cocksucker. His name is Monty, and he's this you know, know-it-all thespian, pretentious as hell, thinks he's better than everyone, really has let his ego get away from him. And he loses it all in one fell swoop. Just everything goes away because of him.
Right.
And he's not totally cognizant of this. So he goes back home, kind of understanding his failure, at least subconsciously, ending up living with his parents under the disguise that he's on a creative hiatus.
Have you ever seen the documentary Overnight about the guy that made the Boondock Saints?
Oh, no, I've heard a lot about that.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like that story of, like, he got this mega contract from Harvey Weinstein to just make the Boondock Saints. Harvey Weinstein bought his fucking bar, and he was gonna finance the movie. He employed him to work in the bar. He was gonna, like, have his band, like, make the soundtrack to the movie and like sponsor his band, and the guy just proceeds to piss it all away by just being a complete dick.
Really?
Yeah. it's the most incredible fucking documentary you'll ever see, and it makes me hate the Boondock Saints even more.
That's crazy.
But that's what reminded me of when you described the plot to your movie. Holy shit.
Aliens.
We're being invaded.
Thomas is
my fucking phone.
He had his cell phone, of course. It happens to the best of us.
Yep.
And I try, and I fail.
Now, you also acted in the movie, too.
No, I did not act.
Really?
I acted in the trailer.
Because that's what I saw, the trailer.
Right, yeah.
I liked you in the trailer, man. The fucking fake nose and, like, just, I don't know.
Thank you. Everyone tells me they liked it. It's kind of hard for me to agree with that, though. I had done acting here and there before. It was something you have to go through in film school, and prior to that, you know, you just kind of cope with it. I've never really liked being in front of the camera. It literally is soul sucking for me. I mean, yeah. I'm not some crazy Aboriginal who thinks that my soul is going to be taken away from me whenever a picture's taken. But at the same time, you know, you certainly feel vulnerable up there. And, you know, I fight through it. But at the end of the day, would I want to do that every day of the week? No. And do I even want to do that for 16 shooting days? I absolutely do not want to.
On top of directing.
Yeah, on top of directing, too. You know, and I was actually talking to somebody the other day about that. My actor, who played Monty, Brandon Tyler Jones, you know, there's such a stark difference between his performance and my performance. You know, him in the actual film, the feature film, and me just for, you know, fundraising trailer, really just like a sizzle reel more so than anything, a proof of concept.
Right.
And, you know, I was telling the person I took the character too seriously. You know, I'd been thinking of it as a drama, and he really brought, like, he kind of showed me how ridiculous this fucking character was. I already knew, you know, from a contextual point of view. I'd written it, you know, I knew what kind of situations he gets into. But then, you know, he actually performs it, and there's just such a comedy to the way he does it. And it's not over the top or anything. It's just, you know, it's exactly what I wasn't seeing, you know, whenever I was trying to perform as the character, you know. So he definitely did a much better job than I could have done, and really anybody else could have done.
So it worked out for you then. So his portrayal of the actual character, that was, it was maybe he made it his own, or did he go like?
No, he certainly did. When I first auditioned him, it was over the internet because he was up in New York. We didn't have the money to fly people down just for auditions and everything. Sorry, actors. But, you know, he was one of the auditions I noticed, at least, that he was incredibly considerate of the written word.
Right.
Which, look, at the end of the day, doesn't make or break a deal for me. But if somebody comes to the table having read everything very acutely and does a bang-up job in their audition and coming back still does an amazing job bringing new perspectives to the character that I haven't seen, that's pretty exciting. And so, you know, I already had kind of an understanding of him as an actor before he came, and then I spent time with the actual person, Brandon Tyler Jones. And I'm a big believer in, you know, what you can get out of a person, you know, quote unquote career wise is often what you can get out of them on a personal level.
Yeah.
And so I could, you know, we built a kind of a trust before the movie, and I understood what kind of a person he was. And through even, you know, more rehearsals and everything, I started to see how he operated. And so, you know, at the end of the day, Monty became not my creation anymore. You know, it was part of both of us. And I mean, everyone who worked on the film, but specifically with Brandon, you know, he just brought new life to the character that I didn't see. I told him I, you know, felt he was a floater before, and now he has much more life. That's something, you know, you don't get with a lot of actors. A lot of actors, I feel like, you know, they're very agreeable. Not that Brandon's not agreeable, mm-hmm. but he always had something new he wanted to understand about the character, mm-hmm. or had questions or had suggestions, you know. And that's the way I like to work, in a very collaborative effort, you know.
Right. So I think we talked a little bit before the podcast about just how you kind of came up as a filmmaker. Like I told you, like Robert and I would make like little short movies in the in high school and shit. So like, I mean, what's your experience coming up as a filmmaker? Obviously you went to film school, and you
where'd you go to film school?
Chapman University.
All right.
In Orange, California. I did my master's there. Before that, I did creative writing at FSU.
Hey.
That's right.
Yeah,
so we just cracked the sound.
You're welcome, listeners.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, I wonder if you just tell me like what, you know, what sort of films were you making coming up? You know, where did you kind of cut your teeth, so to speak?
Well, obviously you have to make like short films and stuff like that in film school. Like usually those are like what, 5 minute or
less usually. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've in film school specifically, I don't know, the 15 to 20 short films.
Yeah.
A lot of them just exercises. Can you tell a story in a minute? Can you tell a story in 30 seconds? Can you tell a story with no speaking? Can you tell a story with no characters? You know?
Right.
Those kind of things. Before that, it was, I mean, honestly, it was just a lot of like school projects and stuff like that. Not that I didn't have an interest in film, but I was telling Kyle before, it's often like, It's hard when you have like a script, and I mean you're an insecure writer, you know, and you're sitting there and you're like, is this even worth putting effort into? And so kind of my thought process a lot of the time is like, you know, if you're willing to put the effort into the production of it, then you obviously have, you know, a script that you must feel strongly about. And so right. It wasn't, you know, it's not too often that that really happens for me. Not that I don't think I'm always putting out good work, but it also has to, like, which I'm not, you know, like, but it also has to kind of align with how you're feeling at the time and what you want to do. So I never really like put, and also, you know, the lack of equipment and technique prior to, you know, my film school experience really was, it was blatant, you know, it was pretty highlighted. So the things I had done previous to that were all these just like, you know, usually more experimental than anything else, just like really just playing around with like friends and stuff. Nothing like too excitable. You know, I didn't make this like, you know, movie that Steven Spielberg made when he was 16 years old and it went back to his hometown and he made $5 off of it. You know, like there was nothing like that. I really didn't start hitting the ground running with films until my first year at Chapman. I had really like, I didn't get into FSU film school whenever I applied for my bachelor's and I tried twice and I didn't get in. And so at that point it was kind of like a resolve for me, but also like kind of stimulating in a way too, knowing that like I'll pursue creative writing and like my interest in literature, which for me, I feel like was the right way to go, as shitty as it was at the time to be like not accepted into their film school. It's like, okay, well you make the best out of anything you get. And so I focused more on writing and, you know, literature, telling stories. I got really fascinated by poetry. And so I just put probably all my eggs at that time into that basket, knowing that I was going to still pursue film on the master's level. And so that's when I really started, like, hitting the ground running. And I did a bunch of exercises there. And then one short film I did there, I got a fair response. It's called Urgent Care. That was a lot of fun. That was also a lot of heartache. It was very hard to make for a movie that involves two people talking to each other in a single room. Oh, wow. And then the next film was Greetings from Florida, which I shot December 2013. We finished it this past October and it had a decent festival run. It went to Oklahoma at the Bare Bones International Film Festival. It went to Sarasota Film Festival, which was right in my backyard, which was really nice. The Myrtle Beach International Film Festival, went to Tampa Bay Underground Film Festival, went to Cannes Short Film Corner.
Nice. So you, I mean, you said you don't really care for like the acting portion of it, but you like being behind the camera. Do you like the directing or do you like the writing or do you just like both equally?
I like both equally. I definitely approach everything from a writer's perspective immediately though. And so I don't know. I feel like with Monty Comes Back, you know, my first feature film, I was dreading, you know, like going on to set and just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, you're kind of freaking out. But I don't know, the flow happens. And I think a lot of that happens because I had been with the script for so long. I'd written it myself, you know, I knew what I wanted. And so that really helped out. But you know, the script is first and foremost for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm a writer more than anything. I guess I would say that because I do get a lot more writing done. And that's usually where I put 110% of my focus a lot of the time. But I mean, yeah, of course I enjoy directing. I probably enjoy it more than I do writing because I'm not locked up in a room,
right?
By myself alone, staring at a computer screen and for
hours. You get to tell people what to do.
yeah.
I mean, that's nice, I guess. It is nice, like, you know, not telling people what to do, but just having like a bunch of people you trust around you for a long period of time who are like good people and support you. You know, that was a big thing on this set too. There were a lot of people I didn't know coming on it. And, you know, by the end of it, we were family.
Yeah.
I mean, huge respect to everyone who was on that set. That was one of the more amazing experiences in your life when, you know, everyone kind of comes aboard and works with you, supports you willingly because they believe in a project and a person.
Right.
So that was a really incredible experience. But I mean, it's just like, you know, I had like withdrawals when production was over, you know what I mean?
to keep working.
Yeah. It's like, I'm ready to go do something. And it's like aimlessness, you know, it's like, okay, so now I get to sit in front of my computer again.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm definitely itching for the moment I can get out of my office.
Are you writing something right now or?
Yeah, well, you know, it always happens like after I like shoot a short film or, you know, even like a music video or something I've done, you know, like I kind of revert back to just like abstractions, and so I've been writing a lot of poetry lately. You know, okay. just getting it, it's kind of like, you know, getting all the shit that's off your head. You know, mm-hmm. you had this mess in your head, and then you consolidated it and pushed everything good out, hopefully.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the rest is there, and so now I'm just trying to extrapolate that and defrag, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been writing a lot of poetry lately, but the next film that I have, hopefully in the works, is with my buddy Will Stribling, who is actually killing it right now. But hi, Will.
Hi, Will.
Hi, Will.
Hey, Will.
How's it going, Will?
What's going on?
How you doing, man?
Shout out.
We're going to be writing a feature that I wrote. I have already written, but I'm not happy with it at all. And him and I worked well as writers together before. We did Greetings from Florida together. And, you know, it'd be nice to have somebody I trust kind of being able to bounce ideas back and forth off of and, like, come to a communion on, like, what is the meat of the story here and is it worth shooting at all?
Mm.
So that's the next thing. It's another feature. I also have a couple short ideas. One is I'm still in discussions with my buddy Matt Landsman, who wants to do a short down here, something like on the horror side of things. And then the other one is along the lines of the two other shorts I had mentioned, Urgent Care and Greetings from Florida. They're both conversation based.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had this, you know, concept of kind of like a running series of films based on conversations between different people, of course, but the first one, Urgent Care, was about two strangers who were having a conversation and finding the inability to communicate. The next one, Greetings from Florida, is about two people who know each other very well who are having a hard time having an intimate connection. And so this next film is about a talk show. and so that's being worked on by me and my buddy Joseph Doherty. And all these things are in the ether right now. You know, they're just out there being worked on, but right. So not palpable. I'm editing... Again, Will Stribling has a new short film coming out probably by the end of summer called The Archetypes, Myths Inside the Body, and it's a modern dance film that was done with the Orange Grove dance troupe up in New York. And I'm editing that with him right now, and hopefully that will be done very soon. And then, of course, there's always Blacktop Passages, a literary magazine that I run with Christopher Cartwright and our buddy John Fisher. And I'm working on the design for the new issue of that right now.
How long has that been going on for?
3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where can everybody find that?
Blacktoppassages.com, or you can find us on Facebook. I'm pretty sure if you Google Blacktop Passages, there's no other thing called Blacktop Passages.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah. Hopefully there's no other thing called Blacktop Passages.
Yeah. We'll find them. We'll kill them. We'll burn it down.
Yeah. Take them down.
Yeah.
So I always have... Too many irons in the fire, and I'm not wearing any gloves, and I'm constantly burning myself.
Yeah, it's a good thing. This is never a bad thing. It's that you always want to stay busy. A
lot of projects, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of projects. We know a lot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned that your actor, Brandon, he came down from New York, and you interviewed him via Skype. So, like, how did that work out? Is most of your cast made up of people from out of town, and then how did they find you? Did you reach out to them? Did they reach out to you? Like, how did that go?
So... we did kind of a blanket call for auditions across the nation, in person in Florida and like the Southeast region.
Yeah.
So like Atlanta usually is where you're going to get most of those people. And then the rest was, you know, all over the internet.
Okay.
Video auditions only.
So I guess there's certain forms. There's certain places where you can put up an open call for
Craigslist.
Yeah, don't
M4M.
That's mostly, if you go to Craigslist for auditions, it's most likely going to be pornography.
Hey, there you go.
Hey, well, yeah.
Depending on what movie.
Set up a nice little couch. And
that's the sequel to Monty Comes.
There you go.
Monty comes again.
Monty comes on her back.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And Monty comes on her back again.
Yeah.
You've got a whole franchise set up here.
We're prepped.
But it really takes a turn after the first one.
Oh, Christ.
After the quiet little indie movie that pops out, then a bunch of pornography from Arrensis Films comes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's where the money comes.
Arrensis Films does not produce pornography.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Unless they're getting paid really, really well.
Let's see the fucking money first, and then we'll make a decision. And
then we'll get into it.
Not that I'm telling you how to run your business.
Porn sells.
Yeah, porn does sell.
You must hate it when you're discussing the movie industry and it always turns to pornography.
I honestly do, and it's funny. Every time I come back to Florida, it's like it's whenever I come back to Florida do I hate being asked, like, what do you do? And there's that moment where it's like I don't even want to really mention what I do because it's going to go two ways. there's a possible third way, but it's like the 1%. I'm not even going to mention it. There's oh, so you shoot pornos, or oh, you shoot pornos, can I be in it? That's usually like the follow-up is, can I be in it, when you jokingly tell them yes.
Yeah.
Or the next one is like, oh, you make the movies, so who have you worked with? You know, and they're expecting that you're like Tom famous Hanks. As shit yeah. or something, you know? And it's like, I don't know, it's very frustrating. I hate kind of like that question coming from anybody, because then it just opens up. It's a good conversation a lot of the time, but at the same time, it's a very frustrating conversation.
Yeah.
I probably sound like an asshole to anyone listening right now. They're like, oh my God, this fucking pretentious piece of shit can't even tell people what they want to do and what he does. And it's like, it's just like, what, this conversation is going to die after a little bit. I could talk about movies all day, but as soon as you start telling me that your last favorite movie is Man of Steel, can you believe that's the last modern movie I can actually think of?
Man of Steel, baby. Shit.
Jurassic World, and you tell me that that's your favorite movie. Yeah. Fuck Jurassic World. Can I go off on a rant right now?
Please go off on a rant.
We actually did that before.
Yeah. No, let's get into this.
Okay, Jurassic World was literally one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life, and I'm not going to bore you guys with all the bullshit I can say about it, but what I will say is it was such a far cry from the original Jurassic Park. I've heard too many people tell me it was just as good as Jurassic Park.
But they said, but in the movie, look at all the cool Jurassic Park shit.
I think what they were trying to do with Jurassic World was they did those homages to Jurassic Park, but I think they were also trying to tie it in and make it almost more of like a kiddie film, like make it more directed towards like youngsters. That's why you had that dino battle. That's why you had like
fucking,
like, I don't know, like showing the Jurassic Park stuff from the first one, because kids who are growing up now, but like I know people now that I work with that were born in like 95. So they didn't see Jurassic Park in theaters like we did,
right?
Like when we were young. So like they're trying to bring like Jurassic World to like audiences again, because it's been like 10 years since
they can make money off it. But you know, it would be amazing if kids these days had their own thing. You know, if like there was a new idea out there or something that they could franchise. Avatar kind of did that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
You know, I mean that was a frustrating thing for me too. Is like, who is the audience of this movie? Because honestly, it felt like they were like, okay, so the people who saw this movie, what was it, like 20-something years ago now? Okay, so most of them are probably, you know, drinking themselves to death at this point. So they must be idiots, and we could just throw anything in front of them.
Yeah.
And, like, what they thought would get our rocks off was, like, an occasional nod to Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
In a movie that, like, had literally no tension. I wasn't scared of it for a fucking moment.
Yeah.
In the original, I still, like, jump when that fucking T-Rex comes. And they couldn't even, like, recreate that now. It was just, like, I mean, I can talk about the whole movie looking like shit and being completely overlit, but, like, it was just bad. The script was horrible.
The CGI was horrible.
I hope somebody who wrote this is listening to this and knows how like how angry I am about like this really awful movie. You spoiled my year of movies. Now I don't even know what to equate this. Anything is better in it. So I have things like, I can't even think of another bad movie this year. This is all that's taking over my mind.
But like Jurassic Park, the thing about Jurassic Park and the thing about Spielberg in general was I know with Jaws he wanted to show the shark up front, but he didn't. And the fact that he didn't created that tension, created that suspense that you didn't see it until later on in the movie. Same with the dinosaurs. Like you didn't see the raptors in the first half hour.
Right.
You saw people dying from the raptors or the bushes shaking. And then you see them like in the last like half hour of the movie, and you create that tension because you don't know what to expect from them. And like with this one, it was like show everything up front. They're in a big ball that's like going around. You see every dinosaur. They're all having fun.
There was a good 10 minutes where we didn't know what the fuck that thing looked like. Yeah. I was scared shit. Like, there's the claw marks.
That was the only thing is like they didn't show that dinosaur. But
also Chris Pratt riding a motorcycle with the velociraptors.
Why make the door a dinosaur sized door? That was like.
Wait, man.
Like when? Okay, so like the dinosaur. He escapes because a ginormous door opens and he runs out of it. But like you would think that they'd put the dinosaur in there before he became that size. So like, why make the door the size of the dinosaur?
In case they ever had to move him to another dinosaur cage.
Yeah, but could you like sedate him or something?
Why?
Maybe.
Here's my question: that sea monster, whatever you want to call it.
Why? Yeah.
Why him generally? But also
as a big fuck you to Jaws,
which is fake too, because they've even said like Mosasaurus never got that big. Like they were literally like as big as like a little bit bigger than great white sharks. This one was like huge.
And somehow it doesn't jump out of the water to eat any park guests during the day, but as soon as there's a big dinosaur there, it attacks it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A huge dinosaur that's going to eat the whole thing.
It was there for two reasons: the trailer and then for the horrible climax. Death of the secretary.
That was my biggest gripe with the movie was the T-Rex and Raptor joining forces.
Yep.
That's just like not
thumbs up, man.
And then they're just like okay. Bro. They're just okay with each other, well, and then they nod, wink.
I think it's
wink.
A giant metaphor for, you know, like small businesses overtaking corporations that emerged from a bunch of businesses.
I heard that like the whole movie was kind of poking fun at big blockbusters in the sense that they were kind of showing that here we're going to throw in something big and new and different, like with the Indominus Rex. Like, yeah. Here's this, but. The old school dinosaurs are going to take him down.
Yeah, Jake Johnson's character, he kind of has a line that kind of pokes fun at that. Yeah, the original park.
Yeah.
It's like it didn't need all these fancy dinosaurs. It was way better.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, that's awesome.
So the fact that they had that, like, is almost like them poking fun at big blockbuster movies, but they are a big blockbuster movie, so they're poking fun at themselves. It was just kind of a weird thing to do in that movie.
Popcorn cinema. It's what's taking over. As soon as everybody stops going to see those fucking movies, it'll be... But hey, I'll...
Yeah, but people aren't. I mean, blockbusters, people love those big blockbusters.
I'll give myself up. Whiplash and Birdman were in the theater, and I saw fucking Dumb and Dumber 2.
Instead of...
Hey, you should see Birdman. I can't speak for Whiplash.
I did see
I've
Birdman,
heard amazing
yeah.
things about
Whiplash
it.
Whiplash is really awesome, and Birdman was really good.
Both of those in the theater.
Dumb and Dumber 2
Let's
was
go
all
see
right.
Dumb and Dumber 2. Dumb and Dumber 2 was okay.
Why the fuck not?
I can recommend Ant-Man. I saw that today.
Really?
It's actually pretty fun.
It was a good
decent.
Movie.
Yeah, I thought it was decent.
You watched it too?
Yeah.
Fuck.
We saw it.
I still want to hate this movie.
It's not like the best Marvel movie, but
it's decent.
It was better than I thought it would be.
It was a lot of fun. It was like as fun as the first Iron Man.
Yeah.
Like, I would say it's not, I don't like it as much, but it's still like up there as far as
you know, Paul,
having a good time with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, Paul Rudd is Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Like, that's always a fun time.
I was surprised at how restrained he was in the movie, actually.
Really?
He wasn't too much of himself. It was just like these kind of like cute moments that he'll have that you really are like, oh, that's Paul Rudd.
I felt it wasn't as jokey as like his character, like how he would normally play like a character.
Yeah. So
he does superhero well then, you say?
Yeah, I thought he did it decently.
You know, the entire time when I was watching the movie, I was just, in the back of my head, I'm just wondering how much of this is Edgar Wright and how much of this is... everybody else.
Well, Edgar Wright wrote it still.
He first started working the movie.
He's credited with it, but there's like three other writers.
He first started working the movie in 2006.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Hmm. Well, here's...
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when the whole buzz came out.
I think you can...
direct it.
Well, I think you can like basically say that when you look at Ant-Man, like I felt it was more fast-paced. I know some people said that it kind of was slow in the beginning.
No, he gets the Ant-Man suit in like the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, right? I felt it was like really like fast-paced, and you get those quick cuts, like when it cuts between like who is it, Michael Pena's character, and like the other characters when he's telling the stories of how he got like information, and it's just cutting to all these characters. That's like classic Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, quick cutting between like. Them opening the refrigerator, cutting to him walking outside to go to the store. Like, that's just like Edgar Wright's very fast paced,
right?
When in his writing and directing, obviously he didn't direct this, but
You know what else I was really impressed with? The scene where you see the young Michael Douglas come in the scene.
Yeah,
it's like whoa.
Yeah,
it's like Michael Douglas out of the first Wall Street.
Yeah, I was gonna say he looks so young.
I mean, you could tell like it's kind of digitized a little bit, but it just still looked really good.
Yeah.
Who's Michael Douglas in this?
He's the original Ant-Man. Yeah.
Oh.
But he gives it to Scott Lang. It's kind of like their.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like newer age. So they're like giving it to the next Ant-Man.
It's bullshit. There should only be one.
One Ant-Man.
One, and then it's over.
Yeah. Like there's only one Robin.
Yeah. Only one Robin. Fuck the other four.
Yeah. Oh, well. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for Spectre. I'm so excited for Spectre.
Is that coming out this year?
No. Oh, they're releasing the trailer tonight.
Are they?
Yeah, a new trailer for Spectre tonight.
Maybe we can watch it live on the podcast. Oh, man.
Actually, I don't think it comes out until midnight.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a break, and then we'll wait till midnight
and come then back,
and then we'll watch it. How about that?
That'd be awesome.
All right, cool. We got to get out of here.
Take a break.
Yeah.
Shark Dropper Studios presents to you
Force is strong in my family. My father had it. I have it. My sister has it. And you have that power too.
There he is. Back to work.
I had to protect my investment.
Investment?
Julianne Good. The whore with the dead fiancé.
I just hope I can help.
Your reputation precedes you.
If you don't open this fucking door right now, I'm gonna break it down. Go, go, go. Hurry up. Go, go.
Mr. K!
It's Jimmy John. He's missing.
Go find him, Tubby.
Polly. We're home.
Doppel Avenue Hurt. Season 2. Brought to you by Shark Dropper Studios.
Hi, everybody. There's music playing. You know what that means. It's time for an Audible commercial, unless you're listening to this podcast for the first time, in which case, welcome. Let me tell you about a little website called audibletrial.com/shark. If you go there right now, you can get yourself a 30-day trial and a free audiobook download for your iPod, Android, Kindle, MP3 player. They have over 180,000 spoken word and audiobook titles for you to choose from. Do you want me to recommend you one? Fine, I will. Fuck. I'm already giving you this fucking free audiobook, but whatever. I'll recommend you a book, too. Harper Lee wrote a follow-up to Kill a Mockingbird called Go Set a Watchman? Something like that, Set a Watchman? The audiobook is narrated by Reese Witherspoon, who does Legally Blonde. So you go from Atticus Finch to Reese Witherspoon, from fucking Atticus Finch to Gregory Peck to Legally Blonde. So go check that out. It's available now at audibletrial.com/shark. If you don't like that book, like I said, 180,000 titles for you to choose from. I mean, what are you waiting for? Go out there and search for one. Surely your favorite book must be on there. If it's not, then go and write them and complain and tell them Kyle sent you. So anyways, audibletrial.com/shark. Okay. Hi.
Hello.
We've just watched the Spectre trailer.
Yeah, it is. It was 1 in the morning right now.
Fuck, man.
Amazing.
They brought Christopher Lee back.
Christopher Lee.
They brought all your favorites are back.
Yes, yeah, Scaramanga.
Yep, Scaramanga's back.
With that third nipple.
With his third nipple.
Blofeld's back.
Blofeld.
Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Jaws.
Oh, of yep. course Jaws.
Even Jaws the Shark is in there, too, which was kind of a bit strange of a surprise as a villain. But
I'm curious to see where he's going to take that.
Cool 007 villain, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still say Jaws the Revenge has the most ridiculous story of almost any movie I've ever seen.
Which is what?
Which is the shark follows Ellen Brody to the Bahamas from Amity Island. He follows her plane, goes to the Bahamas, and like hunts her down because her husband killed the other sharks.
Yeah, bro, it's revenge. You gotta get revenge on yeah. the Brodies.
It's a shark though, too. So there's
wow.
that.
Wow, I mean, echolocation.
Right, which sharks have.
It's possible. What do you think of Jaws the Revenge? Jaws 3 the Revenge.
Thomas. Jaws 4 the Revenge.
Jaws 4 the Revenge. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Jaws 3 was in 3D.
I want to say I'm hashtag blessed to say that I've only ever seen Jaws.
Oh, man.
Never watched any of the sequels.
Well, according to Robert, you're missing missing a film.
You're missing out.
According to my friend Alicia as well, she's a big fan of the whole Jaws lineup, and every really? Time she brings up her favorite thing to do is bring up Jaws 2, I guess, for whatever reason.
Really?
Yeah. And I have nothing to say. And she's like, you just need to see them. The most important movies ever made, you know. But I don't
agree with the first one. And then they kind of drop off. Second one's okay. Second one is it's an okay movie.
Didn't we do it? We've done this before.
I think we have.
Yeah. What happens in the second one? Space, right?
Yeah.
Jaws in space.
Goes to space. That would be Jaws 5.
I thought that was Interstellar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jaws in space.
He was causing those giant waves to come after the ship.
Baby.
I don't even remember Jaws 2. I just remember he electrocuted it. Which, I never knew this, but I found it out when I listened to How Did This Get Made, when they were doing Deep Blue Sea. But, like, the sharks that died in Deep Blue Sea died the same kind of ways that they died in Jaws. So one was electrocuted, like in Jaws 2.
Right.
Saffron Burroughs electrocutes it. The other one was blown up, like in Jaws 1, and I guess Jaws 3. I forget what the other one, how the other
Jaws
one died.
Jaws 3.
Jaws, well.
Well, how did Jaws 4 end?
Jaws 4, oh, it got speared.
Machine gun fight.
It got speared by the boat, and then it exploded, which was kind of weird. It got speared by a boat, and then I think it exploded.
Oh, that's right.
Because it had, like, an air tank in it or something.
I remember hearing that.
And she, like, jabbed it, because sharks just get out of the water.
Good for Jaws.
And stand upright. It was weird.
I've heard that. Surfers will say that.
I remember they made the shark in Deep Blue Sea, like, a foot longer than the shark in Jaws. So I'm just wondering if, like, the filmmakers in Deep Blue Sea had, like, some type of inferiority complex.
Yeah. I want to speak on behalf of all filmmakers out there.
Yeah.
We all have an inferiority complex.
Hence the Mosasaurus eating the great white in Jurassic World. They just, like, had to take it one step further.
One big fuck you to Steven Spielberg.
Even it's like, so I'm making a shark movie, but I have to step it up. Because someone else already made a really kick-ass shark movie.
I'm kind of like, after Sharknado, I don't think you can go anywhere else with, like, shark movies.
It space. Gets
kind That's of why Kevin Smith's doing Moose Jaws.
Moose Jaws, which is such a...
Wait, what's Moose Jaws about?
It's about a moose that attacks people.
Yeah, it's Moose Jaws.
Seriously?
It's basically like Jaws, but with a moose. And I bet you they'll have some, like, weird Quint character and all that kind of stuff.
Played by Johnny Depp, I'm sure.
Maybe.
Is that the one starring his daughter?
No, the one starring his daughter is...
Yoga Hosers. That's
Yoga Hosers, yeah.
Okay.
I like to think, what's the response, you know, why are we making all these, like, you know, movies like Sharknado right now? You know, you think back to, like, Godzilla with Japan making that after, yeah, like, the nuclear explosions, and, like, oh, okay, well, I'm relating this right back to history and,
yeah,
you know, their fears, and then I look at Sharknado and I'm like, 9/11?
Yeah, what is this commentary on? What do we do? What is,
yeah,
this?
I don't know what it is. I think it's just like a ridiculous
I like the 9/11 thing.
Well, that was my answer for zombie movies too. So I don't think that'll hold up for, especially what, like, you know, 14 years later.
Yeah. Do you think so, or is it, or just?
I mean, no. I honestly think, like, I think there's something to it with terrorism. I think, like, you know, some unknown menace. But you could generalize that and say anything. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's about money. I don't know what the fascination with sharks in America is. Like Shark Week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
I
crazy.
I don't fucking get it. I don't understand.
Shark dropper.
Shark dropper.
Even the media attention, you know? Like, I don't... it's like, is that, you know, is this like... this has to happen more often than I'm, like, seeing it on the news, right?
I don't know. It's like, people will say to me, like, oh, man, Shark Week's coming up. I'm like, really? Like, are you excited about Shark Week? Like,
let's not jump on those people, because we do have Shark Dropper as our... company name.
Fuck so, sharks.
Yeah. No, I agree, though.
That's more of a joke, though. We're not obsessed with sharks. This is a big joke.
I'm kind of obsessed with sharks.
Okay, fine.
Not
so you
big.
Get excited for... You're the guy.
No. I don't get excited for Shark Week. I've seen every shark documentary on YouTube, like, over
every
the years. That, when Shark Week comes out, they replay a lot of the same shit from the year prior. They add new shows. But, like, every time they do, like, a top 10 countdown, it's like the most dangerous sharks. We haven't discovered any new sharks in a while, so it's not like the top 10 is going to change much. It's going to be like great white, blue shark, bull shark, white tip. They're always going to be up there. So it's like,
they should grab the scientists from Jurassic World and make a shark that has camo. And also can talk
to other sharks.
Can talk to raptors.
Fuck that shark.
Like, wouldn't it be great if there was just, like, a soap opera that was, like, made up completely of sharks? And it was just like, oh, little Billy the shark has leukemia.
They should just have, like, a whole station just dedicated to shark stuff. Just all, not Shark Week, like, shark just every day. Shark soap operas.
Let's do
shark
social experiment. Let's do that. Let's start that network of just dedicated to sharks, and let's see how long it takes to get a reality TV show.
Dude,
on it.
I saw, like, on Facebook, I was scrolling through, and, like, somebody posted a picture of, like, shark cages where, like, people are now going to, like, I don't know how real it was, but it was, like, people going into the water, and they had, like, a cage around them,
And it's like, so you can go onto the beach and then drop the cage so you can still go in the water, but you don't get attacked by sharks.
You fucking kidding people, me?
People are scared of sharks right now because everyone's getting, like, there's been like three or something attacks within the last like month.
Yeah, I
like,
saw that along, video, right?
Along the East Coast.
There's like a surfer.
Dude, that was scary. Yeah.
What are people more afraid of right now? Sharks or the police? Or ISIS?
I'd say ISIS and then...
The police.
And then sharks? Sharks are third in this lineup?
I say it's maybe... I don't know.
Robert, go get the door.
Okay.
Someone knocked on the
door. Someone knocked on the door, yeah. You go get the door. We'll answer the questions as to what's the scariest fucking...
All right, I'll come back. I want to answer.
Yeah. I'm thinking someone might need their car moved.
No, I think it's my girlfriend.
Oh. Time to get the fuck out of here. We're doing manly podcast kind of stuff. We can't be having this right now.
It's business time.
Yeah, it's business time.
So, Kyle, you and I are the only people in this room right now. And
it's nice.
You know, I'd like to describe you right now if possible.
Oh, please.
You're
yes.
About a 6'7" black man, about 385 pounds.
Yes.
Built.
The black thing I've been kind of trying to keep under wraps, but it's out there now. So, yeah, a black man built... 195 pounds.
No, not 300.
300 pounds.
385 pounds.
You can visually assess me in such a way to like...
Well,
to...
You know, I used to work in a carnival where my job was to guess the weights of people.
Mm-hmm.
For about 19 years, I did this. I'm pretty good at it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, Robert, who's just walked back in, what would you say his weight, height, and skin color are?
That's a big part of it. I mean, he's a 5'8", 262-pound Filipino male.
That's pretty spot on.
This is fucking incredible.
Actually,
I don't know.
Actually, Robert is Cambodian.
That's
too
true.
Close.
That's Ooh. True.
It's pretty close.
I feel
countries
really
are
bad
right next
right
to
now.
Each other.
It's an A for effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so sorry to both Cambodia and the Philippines for confusing.
Oh no, we love it. We're okay with it.
Oh.
All of us. Yeah, okay. We're totally fine. Confuse us as much as you want.
Ooh, okay. All right.
From your friend, the Cambodian Robert. very popular Cambodian name.
Honestly, for a while there, our second biggest market was Cambodia.
Yeah, well, not anymore.
Yeah.
Literally during this podcast, dropped all off.
Right after the statement.
Sorry, Cambodia. On Twitter, my handle is at NUDI, my last name. And Indonesia has their own X Factor, and on there was a boy band called New Dimension, spelled NUDIMENSION. So for whatever reason, a lot of Indonesian teenagers began thinking that I was the Twitter for this entire boy band, New Dimensions, NUDI. And so I've had a following of Indonesian people that's over 100 definitely at this point.
Really?
For the past 6 years, who think that I am an entire Indonesian boy band called New Dimension.
Might be time to capitalize on that.
Well, yeah, do you ever just play along?
there was a point where I was just really confused, like, I don't know, whenever it started happening. I want to say it was like 6 years ago, but yeah. Whenever it started happening, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Who are these people? I don't know them. This is in a different language. And then somebody cleared it up when I like... hollered on Twitter one day. Sorry, tweeted on Twitter
tweeted,
one day.
Tweeted on the hollers.
Twatted on the tweeter. And he cleared it up. He was like, oh, hey, you're being confused with this boy band over here. And so ever since then, you know, I'll do a call out to all Indonesians sometimes, you know.
You should learn Indonesian.
I was going to say, you should capitalize on that. Yeah. Make a film.
A lot of people come up with like new song lyrics in Indonesian.
It's interesting. A lot of people confuse me to be Indonesian too, which... That's okay.
It's good with you?
I'm fine with that. Yeah. Cool
with. Are you a fan? Are you following him on Twitter?
I actually am.
Okay.
I'm a fan of boy bands
and
Indonesia.
So there's a nice overlap there.
Right. And the fact that I'm Cambodia and don't mind Indonesia.
You are literally Cambodia.
I'm Cambodia.
That's country. How you can speak for entire all
country.
Of them.
I'm the entire country, guys.
A moment of silence for the killing fields.
Yeah.
Don't laugh.
How could you, Robert?
No, I'm quiet.
This is a moment
I'm okay
of silence.
With it, okay?
You ruined the moment of silence.
Moment of silence.
I'm Cambodia.
It's good. It's a good moment.
That was a good moment.
Yeah. How do you think your audience feels that we took a moment of time?
We have no idea what our audience thinks. Yeah. We have no idea who our audience is.
Are they listening right
after
now?
After the last episode, I'm surprised anybody's even
Yeah,
listening.
Do you think we pissed off all two of them?
Well, maybe one of them.
50-50.
Mallory should be fine.
Yeah, she's still listening.
Yeah.
The other guy?
The other guy, he's gone.
Yeah.
It's all right. You got to start somewhere.
Which literally happened. More. We literally had a guy that I pissed off so much. He's like, I'm not fucking listening to you guys anymore.
That happened.
That happened.
You guys got like a hotline people can call in right now on or something like 1-800-BIG-DICK or something?
We could do that.
We just haven't done it. We haven't done like a hotline thing. We can do like the live.
I feel like that would just bite us in the ass.
Yeah.
I just don't want someone to call and just do like a butt breathe.
Butt breathe kind of call.
Yeah. Yeah. And just.
Son of a bitch.
Do you guys have sound effects? Do you have like a panel with like a bunch of buttons?
On this?
No, we added in after. You can in the live. Like, that's the thing is, we're doing like a pre-recorded thing. But if we did it like live through Blog Talk, we could.
I think we can do that.
Do stuff.
Somehow.
Yeah. Like while it's going. We just haven't done it that way.
I'd like those little Wayne sounds, like whenever like I come on if like a bong's getting hit or something, you know, like the lighter's coming up. Like,
in really between.
Cool. Or like a yeah in the background every now and then. Yeah. It'd be cool. Something cool.
Or like the transition sound from Lost.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the Law and Order.
Wait, that's the Law and Order? I thought it was
Dun Dun. Was it?
Dun dun, yeah. Dun dun. What are you thinking of? I think of Devo's Whip It.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's thinking of the Angela Lansbury one. Murder, She Wrote. Oh. No, I don't know if that's what it is.
Of course.
Dude, I remember like going to Universal when they did the Terminator 2 ride, which is basically like
a Murder, She Wrote ride.
Yeah. They had a Murder, She Wrote ride. No, but they have like a video.
Why did they get rid of that one?
Yeah.
It was kind of just watching.
It was right next to King Kong.
Fucking Angela Lansbury was hot as shit in that movie.
And surprisingly, they got rid of King Kong before the Murder, She Wrote one. No, but they have a Murder, She Wrote reference on the Terminator 2 ride, which is Terminator 2. Like, I think the ride came out in 94, like 96, something like that. Because I think the actual movie came out in 91. But when they made the ride, it's basically just a 3D movie that you're watching that does, like, a couple of moves and stuff.
Which is basically, like, D-Box.
Right. Now they have all the simulator rides. But this one's kind of, like, lame and it's old school. But when you go in and you have to, like, watch this video before you go into the ride, they have a Murder, She Wrote reference and, like, some other old references. I'm like, they really should just update this one video.
Wait.
And it'll make it so much better.
So does that mean the Terminator 2 takes place in the same universe as Murder, She Wrote?
Yeah.
What's the reference?
It's like, it's talking about how Cyberdyne Systems is going to like fix the future. So it's showing like a butterfly that's cybernetic flying around like sunflowers, and it can also scan like areas. But then it's showing like how a doctor can cure somebody from miles away by just using like robotic arms. And then it showed like somebody can watch. Like, they have, like, a huge screen and showed, like, an old grandma, and she was watching, like, all these screens, and they're all showing different TV shows. It was like, and you can pick from thousands of different shows, and if you don't know what you want to watch, it'll pick it for you, and it picks a Murder, She Wrote, and the old lady's, like, smiling and stuff. Oh, I'm like, really?
And you watch Murder, She Wrote for 30 minutes.
Yeah, then you have to watch an episode of Murder, She Wrote, and then you get to ride the ride.
From the perspective of the old woman.
Right, yeah.
And you have to write it down. Who you think the murderer is?
This is a motion simulator, right?
I'd ride that.
Yeah, I love that James Cameron was so timeless to choose Murder, She Wrote, something that everyone remembers really well.
It'll live on forever.
Yeah,
I completely forgot about that show. I remember like my mom used to watch it on fucking Lifetime when I was like 4. Yeah. Or some shit. And then I forgot about it for years. And then Family Guy made that reference where it's like, oh, yeah, this is worse than that episode of Murder, She Wrote. And Angela Lansbury's like, that's all right. You can say it. The abortion. And I'm just like, from there on, I have not watched or like gone out of my way to watch an episode of Murder, She Wrote again. Still really curious about the abortion. Did she have one? Is that like a big part of this show? Does anyone
I think it was a certain
know?
Episode. I never, surprisingly, I Wait. Never really watched Murder, She Wrote.
Really?
Yeah.
Robert.
Yeah.
Not.
A cornerstone of our generation.
You're saying Angela Lansbury's character had an abortion.
I think either she had an abortion or it was like one of the murder things. It turned out to be an abortion or something.
It had to be the latter, because how old was she in the show?
Yeah, like, she was old.
Like 70 something?
I don't know. Here's my thing with like
She's
old
still
shows.
Alive, right?
Well, let's I see. Yeah, I think she so. Might be.
Craig Ferguson used to pull up a picture of her and say Paul McCartney. Or no, he would pull up a picture of Paul McCartney. And show like Angela Lansbury.
Yeah. Yeah.
He would get them confused.
A striking resemblance.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can imagine motion similar ride with the for the abortion episode.
Yeah, yeah. You know, put you in stirrups and like if you're a gynecologist.
R. Kelly is illiterate, but somehow he made a reference to Murder, She Wrote in in his classic song, which I can't remember the fucking name of.
The remix to Ignition.
The Ignition remix. Yeah.
It was like Murder, She Wrote.
It's like Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah.
It's about them clothes.
Privacy is on the dough.
But here I can still, I can hear him screaming more.
Yeah.
Girl, I'm feeling what you're feeling. No more hoping and wishing.
I'm about to take my key and put it in your ignition.
So give me that toot toot. Let me get that
beep beep.
Running my hands through my fro. Bouncing on 24s. Friday's.
This is the remix to Ignition. Fresh out the kitchen.
Mama rolling that body. Got every man in here wishing. Sipping on coke and rum. I'm like, so what? I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun.
Bounce, 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 bounce,
bounce, bounce, bounce, bounce, bounce, bounce. Second verse. Okay, I'm sorry.
That was the second verse.
Oh, that was the second verse. Fuck, you're right. What was the third verse?
It was something like...
after the party is the hotel lobby.
Oh, yeah.
After the lobby.
We're not doing this right now.
What I was going to say, though, is like, okay, I'll watch like a lot of old shows like Wings and Cheers and even go back to like the Honeymooners and stuff like that. But it's so hard for me to watch like old just dramas like Murder, She Wrote or even like going back and watching like something like Bonanza.
Because they're so dry.
I can't watch that shit.
Yeah.
It's just so hard. I can watch an old sitcom though. Like I can watch Abbott and Costello live, but I can't watch, I don't know, any kind of 70s straight drama. It's just like way too hard.
I feel you, man. Like and that's probably why like not a lot of people talk about them anymore, and why we're forgetting about like Murder, She Wrote.
I think
all the ones that we do talk about are really cheesy too.
Yeah,
you know. So like,
which ones do we talk about? Jeffersons.
But that's even a sitcom.
Taxi? All in the Family.
That's a sitcom. Dallas. All in the Family. Dallas is an old one.
Dallas.
Like
yeah.
I don't think I could sit down and watch Dallas. Christian shot JR.
Oh, come on.
I just wanted to ruin it for everybody.
It was all Patrick Duffy's dream. Was that Dallas? Yeah, it was all Patrick Duffy's dream.
I think we've talked about this, too. Like, where wasn't it that Dallas where the one whole season was all just a dream?
Yep. Yep. It was like season 10 or 11.
Wait, are you sure? I haven't watched Dallas at all, but there was Newhart where the whole entire series
that was the whole thing. Yeah.
Dream. Yeah.
That was good. Okay, because he had two different shows.
The Bob Newhart show and the Newhart.
Newhart, you're right.
Bob Newhart show came first.
And then Newhart was a totally different show after that.
But it was a dream of him from the Bob Newhart show.
Exactly.
What was the Bob Newhart
Mind-bending.
Show?
Mind-bending. It was like a sitcom. It was like the Dick Van Dyke show.
He was like in New York, and he was like some kind of a businessman in New York, wasn't it?
I mean,
and then, he did something where he wore a suit. He had a wife
like Dick Van Dyke.
I think there was a kid.
He might have tripped over a footstool.
I feel like all those are like so similar, like the Mary Tyler Moore show or like Dick Van Dyke or
Rhoda. Rhoda 80s.
I don't know.
I feel like if you take most sitcoms and just like line them up against each other, you'll see like a lot of similarities though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just a ton. I mean, even down to like some of them, like you guys see Mulaney when it came out?
No.
John Mulaney had his own sitcom about a year ago now, and it was called Mulaney. And, like, I don't know, there's something about it that made me wish that it worked. I think it's, like, I like sitcoms in the sense, like, you begin every episode the same, it's going to end the same. You can fall asleep halfway through the episode, know everything's going to be okay.
That's true.
But this, like, suffered from all the bad flaws and cliche flaws that, like, just, you know, point out that something is a sitcom. They had, like, the one female character on the show... The black roommate, you know, and he was super jivey too. You know what I mean? Like he really like the I'm surprised no one said anything about it because like it seemed like it could have been a little racist. Then you had Elliot Gould, who was the best part of that show, who played the gay neighbor, but he was super over the top too. It was almost like, oh, that could be offensive. That could be read as offensive too. But it just like really just tried to fit in the pieces of like a sitcom, and like to the point where you know like every episode just felt like something I had seen before. I mean, like, let's not even mention the parallels between that and Seinfeld. The whole thing starts off with, like, a stand-up thing, just like Seinfeld. Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of, like, especially, like, the older sitcoms, they all had, like, and you can even liken it to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or Full House or anything, they all have like that one, they all have like the same type of episodes. Like, I feel like you go in there and they just each, like, you'll watch an episode, you're like, this is like the episode of Full House where this happened, or this is like the episode of Saved by the Bell where this happened. Like there's always like an episode where they like find money or something like that, and then they have to like figure out what they want to do with the money, or and then they find out like they want to do the right thing, and then they do the right thing with the money or something like that. It's like there's always like episodes that I'm like, I've seen this in Friends.
Well, if you think about it, like creatively speaking, they didn't really have too much freedom because these were network TV shows,
right?
So they had a kind of a leash on like what they could write.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was later when, like, probably even maybe, what, late 80s, early 90s when they started being able to kind of branch out a little bit more. I know Seinfeld didn't follow, like, that strict kind of...
Those tropes.
Yeah, like, it didn't follow that. And even Friends, I don't think.
It established new tropes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheers didn't either, I don't think. I mean, Cheers still had, like, some episodes where they were similar to other ones, but they also kind of branched out and did their own thing, too.
I think they dealt with other issues, too. I mean, even thinking of, like, Frasier, the offshoot of Cheers. Right. You know, like, there weren't... I mean, like, I can't think of too many episodes of Frasier that tried to follow, like, the regimens of other sitcoms.
Right.
But you can notice that about a lot of, like... You brought that up, and the first thing that came to mind is how you can look at any of our, like, childhood shows from Nickelodeon or Disney, and it almost feels like they had a library on the wall. It's like, okay, so episode two... We could just make that episode 16, and that's the same episode as the episode of Doug from 2 weeks ago, you know?
Yeah.
And they were just, like, interchanging the storylines with whatever needs to be fit.
Yeah.
There is, like, that weird universality that came from all of these different shows at the same time having similar messages. I think it's just, like, inevitable. I mean, you have a show that runs, like, four more seasons.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
But then you get to, like, these adult shows. I mean, like, Modern Family is really interesting. Do you guys watch that?
I like Modern Family.
I've heard I should watch it, but I've never heard.
I've watched the first, like, four seasons.
Same writers as Frasier.
Oh, really?
And Cheers. And, I don't know, just, like, the things they're exploring, they've always been topical. They've always, like, kind of hit it with something that needs to be said. And I think that's what really keeps the shows interesting. Instead of, like, going through the same Leave It to Beaver, like, morals that have been learned over and over again, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, also, like, the shows we're mentioning that, like, are highly respected have a lot of, like, good wit about them. The writers know their way around the show.
I like Modern Family a lot. I think it's, like, one of the better sitcoms out right now. I even liked, like, Parks and Rec a lot. Parks and Rec started off kind of slow, but it definitely got better.
I wasn't a big fan initially of Parks and Rec, but then I keep hearing I should watch it. So
I was going to say, are we allowed to talk about the last episode of Parks and Rec? Because I know you just finished it.
I haven't watched it. I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah.
Did it just end?
It ended a little while ago, but I just finished watching.
This is not a knock, but I feel like everyone's getting lazy about television these days because of fucking Netflix and Hulu. So it's like, you know, like 5 years ago, I'd have been like, did you guys see the last episode of The Office ended after this? But like The Office, y'all would have been like,
Yeah.
I saw it just the other day. It was great. It was like this huge cultural event. Everyone sat in front of their TV at 8 o'clock at night and watched it. And now it's like, hey, did you guys see the last episode of Parks and Rec? Oh, yeah, it's sitting in my Netflix queue. I'll get to it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, what? Yes.
Yeah, the same with
talk about it. You gotta walk around everything.
Robert and I and like a bunch of our other friends, we'd get together every Thursday night and it was a big thing. Watch The Office.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Fucking stream that shit.
Yeah.
Time.
I just think it's funny because like you say that, and I remember like you know they always talk about MASH being one of the most the finale to MASH getting like the most viewers other than like you know some football games and like some other kind of shows, but it's like the highest. Watched or highest viewed finale of anything at one time. Everybody just sat down. It was a huge thing. I don't think you'll ever get that again.
No sitcom is ever going to match that.
You're not going to get that again. I mean, Seinfeld came close.
Simpsons, maybe.
Simpsons? Cheers. Maybe Simpsons. I still don't think. I think that a lot of people are just going to be like, Netflix, I'll watch it later.
Watch it on Hulu.
I don't have to go home really fast and quit doing what I'm doing. I'll just watch it tomorrow on computer.
It'll be a thing where it's like, oh, it had the most streams within this time frame, something like that.
I remember the collective disappointment of the last episode of Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. When people,
it was just like... Like, I get what they were trying to do, but it was just, it didn't really hit home.
I still thought it was great, though. And maybe I was really young and hadn't watched every episode of Seinfeld and didn't have the capacity. that I do now to understand everything, but I still really enjoyed it. And I was watching, I mean, I was watching it fairly regularly back then, but like, I never understood.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted to establish that like the entire time, like the entire cast, like these characters, they were just terrible people. Like it was just all coming back.
Honestly, I think like, a better ending for it would have been just another episode though.
Yeah.
I think just another regular episode would have probably been like almost like the perfect ending to it, because like I get what they were trying to do, and I didn't hate it as much as other people did. Like I still thought it was like a decent ending, and it was more of like another kind of clip show to show kind of like, you know, what they've done to people over the years. And that was kind of cool to bring back some other characters. But I just think like doing another regular episode, just having that like an extended one, I think that would have been a cool finale too.
When you bring that up, that's really interesting. I mean, like I think American culture has a problem with not having closure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like any ending you're going to have for nearly anything that's like watched, like, I don't know, Seinfeld, Breaking Bad, any of these large shows, X-Files. I mean, like, it's polarizing completely. I mean, you have like, you know, we can sit here and say we like the ending to Breaking Bad, but I know plenty of people who hated the ending to Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
And hated the ending to Seinfeld and vice versa and X-Files and any of these shows. Friends, I remember there was a lot of contention.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people.
At that time, it's like, oh, that was so fucking stupid. It's like, well, you know, how would you want it to end? You didn't want it to end. You get comfortable with these characters for how many seasons they're on. You really don't want it to end. You're just pissed that the fucking show is ending.
Yeah.
So if you would have done this, like, I think that's a great idea. Just another episode of Seinfeld, show you the mundanity of it.
Yeah.
And if they were to do that, people have been like, well, that was stupid. They didn't like close.
Oh yeah, I know. Some people would still hate it and stuff,
and vice versa. You know, it's like it adds closure to a show that didn't necessarily need closure. And like everyone wants these nice little neatly wrapped boxes, and that's not life. And that's always bothered me. You know, it's like I mean, it's bothered me. But then again, I watch sitcoms out the yin yang any chance I get. So it's like as much as I like the idea of not having closure, every episode closes just the same as it began.
Yeah.
So.
But I feel like sometimes you get to the fact where, like, you just have, like I won't spoil anything for Parks and Rec.
Spoil it. Fuck it.
No, but it became, like, a thing where they were, like, I felt like the last season was almost like, all right, let's hurry up and wrap this up. And they were trying to give closure to everything. And it wasn't as funny to me as, like, the earlier seasons because it was more story-driven because they were trying to get to that ending. Like, they were trying to wrap it up. And, like, I mean, I get what they're trying to do because of the closure and stuff, but I think that also takes away from it. I mean,
I agree with you. I kind of like, I won't have any spoilers, but it didn't sit well with me the last season of Parks and Rec at first. I was like, okay, like this is really going really fast. Everything is going super well for everyone. There's little to no conflict involved in this last season.
Yeah.
And it did seem like they were wrapping everything up. But then I think back and I'm like, well, what did I like about this show? And The Office, too, at that. It was kind of showcasing, for as ridiculous as the characters are, it showcases, like, the, you know, modern community. Average man and woman. You know, like, people who are working these jobs and doing things that we often don't give credence to. You know, the people who run our parks, you know, that we take our kids and dogs to and let them shit all over the ground and tear things up and smoke cigarettes under the slides. Like, there are people who have to deal with this. Who smokes cigarettes under slides other than homeless people?
Yeah.
They're not paying taxes. Anyway.
Get the fuck out of here.
But, like, you know.
You just described my Sunday. I take my dog to the park. He shits everywhere, and I smoke under the slide.
Well, I mean. You know, you're not going to clean it up. What else the fuck are you supposed to do?
That's true.
But, you know, it was an interesting ending because everything was going really well for everything. Yeah. Everyone, you know, and I almost felt like this is what they deserve. You know, it's almost, it kind of spoke to me contextually more than anything, where it's like, we've watched these people work tirelessly and put like all their commitment into the good of society. And here's like a fair payoff. No one's dead. Mm-hmm. No one, you know, sorry guys. I hope that doesn't ruin anything. No one dies.
Spoiler.
At the end of Parks
Leslie Nope's still alive.
Yeah. Leslie's still alive. You know, nothing awful happens. It was kind of nice because I have a big problem with like a lot of TV now. Like oh my God, I'm about to say it. I hate Game of Thrones.
Dude,
I also, like, I don't hate it, but I didn't like Breaking Bad. I was not one of these, like, fans of it who would watch it every week. The only reason I would watch it every week was because my other friends did. Mm. And, you know, not that I'm, like, a follower, but, like, what else
am
I supposed to do? You know?
Yeah,
exactly. Join in on it. It's this big cultural thing. But, like, I don't know. What bothers me about a lot of modern shows is just, like, the gruesomeness we kind of fall into, the horror of things, the darkness. And, like, don't get me wrong. I'm not naive. I explore these things on the daily.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, is this all there is from life? Is like drug overdoses and murder and things like this? Even like down to, you know, a lot of like comedy shows these days, we take darker turns and everything. And I kind of miss the days where things went well for people sometimes, you know? Yeah. That's just like sometimes everything didn't have to go poorly. That's, every episode.
I never thought of that. That's
definitely, well, I remember like after Breaking Bad ended, I think I sent, like, I put something on Facebook saying like, why has everything got to be like so dark? Like everything, Batman, Dark Knight Rises, Dark Knight, that whole Batman trilogy had to be dark.
Dark.
Skyfall, Casino Royale, darker tone to James Bond, which you come from the Roger Moore days of fucking goofiness and gadgets, and then now you're like this dark, dark. Even Pierce Brosnan was more action-y. Now it's all dark and gritty. And then, you know, Breaking Bad is dark and gritty. And like, just, I don't know. I feel like in Batman versus Superman, it's not like Superman, who's this Christopher Reeves character saving people all over the place. It's like Superman's an alien and Batman's here to stop him. And it's dark and gritty. Yeah. Everything's got to be dark now. And like, that's kind of why I like Marvel, in an essence, is like the Marvel movies are a little bit more fun.
Yeah, it's true.
And then I will agree with, like, I liked Breaking Bad, but there were a couple parts to Breaking Bad that, like, I was just like, I felt like it was almost they did it for shock value, and right. like that's the main reason why I hate The Walking Dead, because The Walking Dead is like introduce a character, have them on for a season, and then kill them off, lot of lines, and then kill them off just for shock value. And Game of Thrones does that too. And I read the books to Game of Thrones, and I like them. I like how they're written and stuff. But I mean, I do hate that like so many of these characters are dying, and then they introduce new characters when like that's just. I know that's not the traditional way, and it's like a new way of him expressing like just this world, and like that's cool because he's saying like no one's safe, like everybody can die. That's cool that everybody can die. Show that once or twice, then we realize that, and then the next time you do it a little bit further away where it becomes a shock. When you're doing it two or three times a season, you kind of become numb to it, and it's now a running joke where you're just like, every one of my favorite characters is dying in Game of Thrones, and that's how it is. I don't know.
It's feeding our mentality as Americans and like media consumers and vice versa. Oh man, I'm getting super like.
No, you're right though. I was thinking the same thing. It's like the violence culture. You see it all over the news. It's happening in the shootings that go on, the police
and
violence.
Times aren't that bad. Like, times are not that bad. Which pisses me off when people are like, I can't believe the society we live in. Really? Is it much worse than fucking gladiators? Like people sending they used to send people into gladiator cages and fight animals to the death. And like, if they killed the animal, they would just send more people in there to kill them because they just wanted to see prisoners die or just other like homeless people die. Well, in these gladiator
stadiums.
To be fair,
that does sound like a fun time.
That's true.
I mean, how about 50 or 60 years ago when, you know, black people and white people still went to different bathrooms and fountains. Like we definitely live in a better time.
We just got gay rights. We just got gay rights, and people. Mm-hmm.
We just got them.
And people
just got them. Literally,
we got them, guys.
Got them on Prime. It was on Prime.
Yeah,
you shipped them on in.
Free gay marriage for everyone.
Yeah, just for Prime members.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I just think like it's funny that like we get gay rights, and then there's still people like out there that are like upset about it. Upset about the gay rights, saying that America's getting destroyed because of these gay rights, and now our world's crumbling and stuff like that. And all I can think is, like, because people have rights just like you do, like, how does that – that's a good thing compared to, like, all the shit that times are just, I think, are getting better. To me, I see times as getting better. Not everything is fixed, obviously. There's still racism, and when people say there isn't racism – they're dumb. There's still racism out there. It's just, but it's definitely not how it was back in the day, which is an improvement.
You know what, though?
To not honor that, I don't know.
After the whole, we're jumping everywhere. But like after the whole, like after gay marriage was legalized, or the decision came down from the Supreme Court, and like the reaction from both sides happened, I finally understood what people meant when they're like, well, Obama's ruining America. They're ruined. Like, yeah, he's ruining like your fucked
your
up
America.
Crazy like conservative version of America. Yeah, right. I guess he is. Yeah, in a way.
But their conservative America has only been a thing since 1776 or whatever, like since the like Constitution. And like I've even heard that like times change. Like it's impossible to think that like you're gonna stick for 300, 400, 500, 600 years. You're gonna be like, oh, like it's just gonna be the same. Obviously, technology's different, so you're gonna be okay with an iPhone. What if you're really gonna still believe like gay people shouldn't be married and that rate like you, or I don't know if I want to say that, but like if you still have like certain have certain conservative views, it's like then use an old rotary phone, use your fireplace for heat. Like times change, it's okay to kind of go with it.
Let me state this first. I'm not defending or supporting the community of bigotry out
right.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess I constantly go back in my own head to the Chick-fil-A disaster of 2012, if you all remember.
Yeah, where
Chick-fil-A decided to, make a political move that, you know, made a clear statement on where they were on the whole gay marriage issue. And, I saw their quote-unquote attack on the gay community, and then I saw the gay community's attack back. And what I saw were a lot of, like, viral videos with violent things said or expressed and anger and everything. And, I was almost upset at, the gay community for doing that. It's like, that you're just kind of like spitting back the same retorts. Here's the thing, though. Like, this thing, we keep talking about America and everything. It's been a thing since 1776. Was that right?
I think that's about right.
Yeah. Thank God, because I don't remember my history well. But, or numbers for that matter. But, America is an idea. So it's like all of our idea of America involves, gay marriage and happiness amongst everyone and rights for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then, the Mormons out west, their idea of America does not involve that. It's completely different. So, like, the cool question of, like, what's right and what's wrong is really, I know what's right. They know what's right by them, but what is the universal right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's always been tough for me to attack either crowd. I know what I believe in, I hate to take the neutral standpoint where it's like, well, I'm just not going to say anything, but I kind of feel like, things are just going to pave themselves over. Things are going to be dealt with how it will be, but based on votes, hopefully, and not, anything else, but, or anything crooked, but, it's hard to say, are these people so wrong for thinking the way they are, even if they do use like an iPhone or something, do they need to resort to other ways or can they just not feel like wrong by something? When they take action and go to the extremes is when,
And like, I'll agree with that in the sense that like Bill Burr has like this stand up where he says, I think you have the right to be racist. If you want to be racist, you can hate any kind of person you want. That's fine. As long as you don't act upon it, as long as you're not trying to stop them from getting the same kind of rights you are, like whatever it is, if you hate white people, if you hate black people, if you hate anybody, doesn't matter. I think you have that right because, America is the whole thing. Freedom of speech, freedom of like thought, freedom of religion, all that kind of stuff, which is fine. Like you have that right. It's like the Chick-fil-A thing. The guy said that he didn't agree with gay marriage. And I'm kind of like, I totally support gay marriage, but I'm still going to eat your Chick-fil-A sandwich.
Yeah,
it's fucking
delicious. Like your Chick-fil-A sandwich.
It is.
And like to think that he wasn't going to think that he's against, like, I don't know how like people didn't expect him to be against gay marriage since he's a super religious guy.
The fucking places are closed on Sundays.
They're closed on Sundays. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those things. It's like Bill Burr said, like, how do you not, like, you got to know that they're going to think that. He's like, it's like with the Duck Dynasty guy. Oh, he's against gay marriage? That's shocking. Like, obviously, he's not to say, like, everybody who's like the Duck Dynasty guy is going to be against gay marriage, but it's not shocking that he is. And just because
baby.
He says he is doesn't mean he has to get fired from his show. And, like, I'm kind of in agreeance with that. Like, let him speak his mind. If he doesn't agree, that's fine. Like, where I just have the problem is when they do stuff to try to stop people from having the same rights that other people have.
The biggest problem I had with what he said was the fact that I even heard about it. Like, why did he give any kind of like respect to this like Duck Dynasty? He is a duck call maker.
Yeah.
Like, he's not fucking Henry Ford here. Okay, guys. Like, he's not like pushing boundaries or anything. He has made millions off of like hunting ducks and making calls to get them closer to you.
That's that reality TV.
I haven't even eaten duck since the last time I was at a Chinese restaurant. Oh, yeah, where do you even eat duck elsewhere? Yeah. Like, what?
I think it's just more a sport thing.
They just love.
He's
just
not
shooting.
That important. Why was he on the front of people? Is my main point. Here.
And it's just because of that comment. It's because of that comment, and it sparked controversy, and then the media runs with it. And it's kind of like, if you don't believe, like, don't be shocked by that. Who cares? And like Bill Burr, my favorite thing that he said was the whole, what was the guy's name? The basketball coach who said the,
Donald Sterling, the owner.
Yeah. He when he said that thing, he said Bill Burr has the joke where he says the guy's an old guy. He's like, it obviously he's going to have racist thoughts because that's the kind of world he got brought up in. He's like, honestly, what he said wasn't even that bad. He said he didn't even care that she was hanging out with black guys. He didn't care that she would go to the movies with black guys. So anyway, he's like, the only problem he had was her posting that shit on Instagram. He's like, just stay away from Instagram. He's like, he didn't care if she posted it on Facebook. He didn't care if she posted it on Twitter. Just stay away from Instagram. Like, that was his only problem. He's like, that's not even that bad of a racism. Like, and I kind of like, kind of just makes sense. Like, older people, not every older person's going to be racist, but a lot of them are going to have their racist thoughts just because that's the world they were brought up into.
As soon as you declare guilty in the court of public opinion, though, it's over for you, son.
And that's the thing. It's like, I don't.
It's game over.
That's also kind of like, I think, our PC nature of just being like, oh, you said something that's not like, you know, that we just got to punish you for saying your opinion. And everybody's entitled to their opinion.
But it causes people to, like, be afraid to even speak anymore a lot of the time. You have to walk around every fucking thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, we can't have, like, a civilized and intellectual conversation about abortion without you hitting a hot button for someone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I have to talk to a lot of people, a lot of older people all the time, you know? And inevitably, every now and then, some hot button issue gets brought up. And because I grew up in a very conservative environment, they all think that I have a very conservative mindset towards theirs, aka usually bigoted, which is not the case. And so, like, I have to kind of get stuck in these conversations back and forth where, you know, I'm not going to change their mind or anything.
And if you're a celebrity and you speak your mind, like, that could spell life or death for your freaking, like, career. Because you can get, like, kicked off of TV or kicked off of, like, if you say something on NBC and then the NBC doesn't like that, and they're like, we don't want any part of this. And, like, you can't blame NBC because the media spins it. So then NBC is kind of worried about, like, okay, well, shit, they said this. And
gotta fire them.
We'll just, all right, we won't be partners with you anymore. Yeah. Like, that's, and it's kind of sucks. Like, that's just because you speak your mind when everybody has an opinion.
Yeah, it's like when Caitlyn Jenner came out. It's if someone makes an off-color remark or some kind of off-color comment or take on it, just speaking from the mind, it's like they get attacked and it's like, oh fuck, I'm sorry, yeah, you know what, like,
and I don't know where you guys stand on the whole like Caitlyn Jenner thing,
but it's
kind
of the other side of the coin of what he was talking about, in the sense that you have her, she kind of fucking, and I lost my train of thought now.
Well, I was going to say gave her that Courage Award.
Yeah, the Arthur Ashe Award for Courage at the ESPYs.
Yeah, and they're like, a lot of people are pissed off about it, and they're like, how is this courageous and not soldiers and stuff like that?
Yeah,
and
you see, like, people post on Facebook pictures of, like, you know, maimed, veterans.
Yeah, veterans,
right?
And stuff.
And it's like, well, how is these people, like, not deserving of that award and not Caitlyn Jenner? I'm just like, well,
it's different.
Just because, you know, they didn't give them this specific award doesn't mean they're not brave.
Yeah.
It's
a different type of courage. Like, somebody posted a meme of, like, a doctor going to a kid and, like, pricking him with a needle, like, giving him a shot, and then giving him, like, putting a Band-Aid on and going, like, oh, you're so brave. And then, like, the door kicks in, and they're like, but not as brave as these soldiers. And, like, that's not – that's the thing. It's, like, it's a different kind of brave. Like, they're just saying she was courageous for coming out as a trans. It's a different type. Obviously,
you know,
soldiers are brave and courageous, and we should actually probably honor them more. Or in the media more than we do, because we're always, like, showing the bad side of stuff. But like, the fact that, like, to say that she's
it's
not
just
brave,
in that specific context, though.
It's different,
like,
yeah.
Because, like, Caitlyn Jenner before was Bruce Jenner, like a...
What?
Yeah, he's like... He was like a...
You blew my mind.
Yeah, he was a gold medal Olympian.
So
right?
He already won enough awards.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
But, I mean, I think the problem is, like, I don't know. I haven't watched the ESPYs. I don't know too much about sports.
Yeah.
Did they have this award last year? Did they give it to Michael Sam or any of the
other? I think they did actually give it to Michael Sam last year.
Did they really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I think so.
So I guess, like, my, you know, oh, that sucks. My argument's down the drain. my only problem with it came from, like, I guess, like, it's kind of multifold. Number one, it's, like, the topical nature of it. The fact that she's already in the news, it's, like, obviously it's, like, a media, you know, scheme. So that was, like, the number one problem. Also, like, You know, is like I don't want to like equate and qualify bravery or anything, but yeah. Honestly, is this like the bravest someone has been? So, like, let's get something straight here. A white male with a lot of money did whatever he wanted and didn't care to like what anyone thought. That's bravery. If that's bravery, let's give Donald Sterling the award. Like, let's give, you know, I mean, like, that sounds really shitty, but at the same time, like, how brave is that compared to, like, I don't know, like, the soldier who, like, quit his professional football career and got, like, his legs blown off in fucking Iraq, you know? Yeah. I don't know. That's the difference for me, is that it's so topical. It's definitely a media move. And at the end of the day, like, really, is it brave? I mean, like, it was brave when he came out and said that he wanted to do it. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. I mean, like...
There's just different types of brave.
I think the problem is also like winning an award is it's like it's a competition at that point for bravery, and that's like not something that's supposed to be competed.
You're not supposed to do that. Yeah.
Everyone should just be brave and just do it.
It's like this. Yeah. Like it's brave. Like okay, why is the soldier who his legs got blown off and now he competes in pickup basketball games or you know or plays thrash ball? Why is that brave? Well, because it inspires other people who are in that same condition to keep going and strive for that, and inspires other people. Same with Caitlyn Jenner, people that are afraid to come out of the closet or that are otherwise ridiculed for
being transgender
or transsexual. It kind of empowers them and inspires them. But yeah, at the same time, It's are we making it a competition or what? Like, I this is an interesting little factoid. I heard a bit of a conspiracy theory that Bruce Jenner, when she was still Bruce Jenner, granted the exclusive interview, the first time interview to ABC's Diane Sawyer. ABC is a subsidiary of Disney, which is also a subsidiary of ESPN.
So you think there was like some type of deal?
So by way of granting exclusive rights to the interview, she gets the award after the transition.
You might not be too far off because stuff like that does happen.
I mean, obviously, but I just think like if you're gonna, it's hard to just define what bravery is, and kind of like
it gets tricky when you give out awards for bravery.
Bravery is like waking up every day and leaving your house, in my eyes, because that's the hardest fucking thing to do.
Yeah, just doing work, or even if you're just like taking care of kids, or you're just trying to like live your life. And like,
how the fuck do you quantify it? It should be the Arthur Ashe Inspiration Award of like be inspiring X, Y, and Z, or even not even award, but like this person was inspirational.
Give me an award for bravery because I didn't kill myself this year.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're going to go like the Grammy route and have like several, like hundreds of different awards that you give out for just bravery.
Yeah.
Like bravery during this time period, bravery for coming out, bravery for fighting in a war.
And the ESPYs is like, what is this, the ESPYs anymore? What are we doing right now?
It's Grammys too.
But I think to bring it back to, I guess, what kind of originally started this, like it's sort of the culture that we live in with the internet, and I guess the way that we take in information is why maybe we're darker as a society, because we see, I can go on Reddit and find an entire subreddit of people dying, or you know, I can watch someone's face flattened by a and I used to be back in the day, like in the 2000 when the internet was still young, I would see that and it'd be like, it's shocking. It's like, no, and it ruined my day. And now I see it, I'm like, oh, fuck, that was fucked up. And then I forget about it like a few seconds later. And it's kind of like we're kind of jaded to that. So it's like TV, what are they going to do to shock you? How are they going to, you know, how are we going to wow you, son? Huh?
Yeah,
I think that is it. It is a lot about shock. And I think like, you know, the internet really opened the doors. You bring up like shock videos. You know, I remember like the most gruesome thing that I saw when I was young was the Nick Berg video.
Nick Berg video.
When he got his head cut off with a fucking steak knife.
I still won't watch that.
Brutal as shit. It was shocking. And then, you know, all of a sudden, like what starts creeping into my life more and more is like these morbid curiosities that pop up on the internet. It's like really the closest you can get to like a lot of these deathly situations without being in them. And I think like that's kind of what spawned it. And then the rawness we see of like surveillance, seeing real situations play out, has definitely played into things like, you know, Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
You know, down to something like that, or, you know, just like, you know, Breaking Bad even. You know, what's really happening in this world right now? You know, when I'll go out to New Mexico sometimes and I'll see some friends out there, and right when Breaking Bad was picking up, I was talking to them. I'm like, so does this really happen out here? I know it's like, well, I mean, first of all, I was driving around and they literally have signs that say like, this is a no meth area. Jesus, and so that kind of spawned my question. But then they were like, yeah, you have people who drive tractor trailers out behind a big mountain that no one ever checks. They cook up some meth, When they're done, they burn it down. No one questions the big black smoke because forest fires happen all the time.
Yeah.
And then they get the fuck out and they have a bunch of meth and they start dealing it, you know? And I mean, like, you know, we're getting more, we're into more gritty and real things now because we're so obsessed with that. I think that's what interests me about, like, the obsession with Game of Thrones right now.
Yeah.
Like, the pure drama and gruesome things that happen on the show. Like, it's a, talk about an incredibly dark show. Or True Detective, for that matter, you know?
Yeah.
There's not an up note in either one of these shows.
God.
And we're obsessed with that drama that comes from it. But 10 years ago, we were happy as shit. And the most talked about thing was when Rachel and Joey got back together. I know that was never a relationship on Friends,
yeah.
But I didn't watch Friends, so that's all I have to work with.
Yeah.
Rachel and Joey dated a little bit.
You really
bit.
Think it's just part of a cycle, though? Like, this current grittiness is just like a backlash against
the
happiness.
What has there ever been the
like, are we, is the grittiness bubble going to pop soon?
Because grittiness, I mean, it's more commonplace, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not an oversaturation yet, in the sense that you do have things like Marvel. You do have
Guardians,
like,
of the Galaxy. That was a happy, fun movie.
All the Marvel movies are pretty much more upbeat and cartoony than, say, like the newer DC movies.
Is it one of the biggest shows out? Fucking The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, Big Bang Theory. I mean, there's still, like, I don't think it's an oversaturation yet, but I think it is. It's more prominent now than it has ever been. Like, I watch a lot of old movies, and, like, there are darker old movies too, like Days of Wine and Roses, where Jack Lemmon plays just an alcoholic, and, like, his life is just spiraling out of control. Or The Lost Weekend, Billy Wilder directed The Lost Weekend, which was about an alcoholic, and it doesn't get better. It just doesn't get better. So those movies have always been around, but they're just way more prominent now. And I do think that, like, with stuff like Game of Thrones, but my whole issue is just, like, I feel like a lot of people don't even know what's going on in Game of Thrones. They just like it because of the violence and stuff.
Violence and titties.
Yeah, and the sexual content. And it's kind of like, I like stuff for story. And like seeing Game of Thrones, like, I mean, I still read the books. I'm still reading through the third one. And I did watch the first season. And it was like well-directed, the first season. Like, I liked what they did with it. But then, like, the more I hear about second, third, fourth, like how it's going, it's just like, I know what characters are about to die that I'm reading about right now. I know they're dying later on. And it's kind of just depressing because, like, I feel like it's just a shock value thing. And I know The Walking Dead did the same thing, shock value. I think if it's integral to the story, like, put a death scene, a major death scene in there. But if you're just going to kill off every main character, that's why I can't watch, like, the Saw movies and shit because they're just – there's no suspense. There's no tension. It's like somebody gets trapped. They're dead. They don't have a chance to escape. It's just watch them die for 10 minutes.
That's why
torture porn.
That's almost like I've never liked horror movies because, like, I make a connection to the characters and I don't like to watch them just die after that.
That's why I like certain. That's why I love horror, but I love specific horror. Like, I like The Thing or Alien because, like,
those are good.
There's way more tension and you actually feel for the character. So when somebody does die, it's like, shit, like, they're dead. Whereas now it's just like, somebody gets captured and then, like, the guy goes to torture them for, you know, 5 hours and then sews their face to some guy's asshole. And then, like, now they're a centipede. And like I'm that, like, I can't get into that.
The scene in Jurassic World where the secretary gets picked up by the bird and then she screams. Like, that was upsetting. I'm like, fuck, why did this need to happen? Like,
she was a shitty secretary.
But she wasn't even, she wasn't an asshole. Yeah,
did she deserve that?
On that note, I heard that she actually had, like, a whole other storyline that was cut out of the movie where she doesn't actually die and, like, she has a storyline that continues on, but they had to cut it for time. But I think what's interesting about, like, the Saw conversation and everything and, like, just the gornographic nature of it is, like, we used to see characters be people and, like, go through their day. Like, let's look at Halloween where it's like, okay, you see this, like, teenage girl and she, like, goes out with her friends and she's having fun and she lives this life and she's kind of innocent and, like, it's nice and they have this banter and then all the shit starts to happen.
Right.
And now we start in a dark room where somebody's tied up and we hear the villain say, these are all the awful things you've done. You're a horrible human being. Yeah. And all we have to like them by anymore is the fact that we can put ourselves in that position. We hope to never be in it, but we can put ourselves there and be like, oh, on a very human level, this person is scared shitless and I don't want them to die. Right. As opposed to like, oh, well, they lived like a normal life and they're actually like a pretty decent person aside from these specific notes that this crazy person is picking up on that happens every day with everyone. You know, so we have no moment to like connect with these characters anymore. You brought up Alien, you know, the whole movie you're with.
Dude, the whole movie, the alien doesn't even appear until the first 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the alien appears. It's 50 minutes into the movie, and that's because the whole first part is like story and dialogue and character development. And when they sit around the scene and then the alien bursts out, like sit around the dining table and stuff, like it's a dramatic entrance of this creature for the next hour. You're gonna have to deal with it in this dark spacecraft, and it's like that. That's why, like, I love Alfred Hitchcock, is like the suspense, intense nature of like Psycho and The Birds, and even like his other suspenseful type movies and thrillers.
Dumb, so, like, boring.
Yeah, but now it's like you said, it's got to start off right away. Someone has to die, and then you don't get any kind of character development except for a stupid, or like you don't even care. Like the people are so kind of like just. Like, sometimes you're even almost, like, rooting for the villain, not on purpose, but because the villain's, like, trying... You're following the villain, and the villain's chasing, like, the person running away, and then the person gets away, and then the villain, like, just barely misses him, and you're almost like, oh, you almost had him, but no, shit, no, you're the villain. Like, why am I rooting for you? And they just don't know how to make it... They don't know how to make you root for the characters anymore.
They don't make movies anymore.
Yeah, they're stupid. They're all stupid.
Yeah.
All right. We've gone on long enough.
Yeah.
Thomas, where can they find everything? Everything.
Everything about what?
About
everything.
About your movie.
About Monty Comes Back.
Yeah, about Monty Comes Back.
Okay, so we have a website. If you go to the URL montycomesback.com, you will be rerouted currently to a Kickstarter page that is a 404 now. So it's an error. We need to fix that. Okay. Disregard the website.
We know those struggles right. too.
Really, you should jump on Facebook as soon as possible and look up Monty Comes Back and like that page. And we're also on Twitter and Instagram, I believe, under Monty Comes Back or Monty Comes Back Film. I think right now, most importantly, it's Facebook, getting the word out there.
Okay.
We're in post-production on it, so it's going to be a couple months before we have anything. But, I mean, before anyone out there can really see it, it will be around December, January, and we'll hopefully have a release of some sort.
And then how can they see it at that point?
You know, we'll see. Ideally, the situation will be that we find a distributor. But if we don't find that, then we're self-distributing.
Okay.
But we'll also be, like, sending out to festivals and hopefully getting out there to media markets and whatnot. So... you know, we're really not sure the exact release date that a wide audience will be able to see it, but hopefully it will start getting out to, you know, festivals and that circuit around December, January.
Okay.
But just keep up to date on Facebook. We'll have a lot of announcements and updates and information.
All right. Facebook. Go to Facebook. Like Monty Comes Back while you're there. Check out Shark Dropper, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe you could find Monty Comes Back through Shark Dropper.
Yeah.
And
we'll post the link. And
don't pretend you're not already on Facebook.
No,
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. We'll post the link anyway.
Actually, I will. Yeah, I'll put the link in this episode, so you can find it through this episode on either iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or on
Facebook.
So you can find it that way too. So there you go.
Cool.
Speaking of sharkdropper.com, go to sharkdropper.com. All of our podcasts are there. We have a lot of them. I don't feel like explaining it all.
No.
Cop Doctor, Stop of them, Avenue.
A lot of fictional, non-fictional, whatever suits your mood. Whatever, and then also definitely check out Patreon, though. We're adding more stuff to Patreon soon, some more bonus content for people who help donate. You can donate for as less a dollar.
Dollar.
So just
dollar
a
month.
Dollar more a month will definitely help us out. So check us out, Shark Dropper Studios on Patreon.
All right. Well, for Thomas Nudy, I have been Kyle.
Robert,
yeah, we're doing the thing where we say our names.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just doing this.
Okay.
Fucking A.
All right, John.
did you want me to say?
Yeah, say again? Thomas.
My name is Thomas. Thomas Nudy.
Thanks for coming.
Nice to meet you.
That was the most awkward ending for everyone.
All right, let's do it again. I'm Kyle.
I'm Robert.
I'm John.
I'm Thomas.
And we'll see you next time. Yes, I stand here looking out over the ocean. Cause a great big commotion. 'Cause when I saw what looked like a fin break through the surface again, it was a shark.
We're above the target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! 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 This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.